Grab your spy gear and get ready to talk about Bond, James Bond, on We Got the Geek.
New model.
The very latest in intercepts and countermeasures.
And six beverage cup holders.
I've always tried to teach you two things. First, never let them see you bleed.
And the second?
Always have an escape plan.
For the world's greatest secret agent.
You've confused hundreds of these, right?
When the stakes are high.
Yeah, but they're usually standing still.
Life's full of small challenges.
And the danger hits too close to home.
Ah! Boom! He has M.
By noon tomorrow, you'll feel nothing at all.
I thought it was your job to protect me.
It's not just professional.
Someone's tampered with the bomb!
It's personal.
I have to get it back, or somebody's gonna have my butt.
First things first.
All right, everybody. It's been a while, but welcome to the latest installment of Shaken, Not Stirred, our insane project where we decided to view all the James Bond movies in order, which, as you recall, I had never seen a James Bond movie, and people were shocked.
Definitely me.
And with that, welcome back to the program, our good friend, teen fishing sensation, John Ballmer.
Fishing sensation?
Yeah.
Teen?
Well, I started in my teens with the shows.
Yeah, and maybe she'll yell stuff out. We got Case Stew in the background, too.
I am lovely.
She is lovely. She had seen this movie in the theater. Didn't remember any of it, though, right?
Skiing.
Skiing. Oh,
sorry, spoilers. Skiing.
There's skiing in almost every Bond movie, so that's just...
you think?
Skiing, car chases, hot women. That's the first part of the formula for James Bond.
Yeah. So, you've been with us on a lot of these segments. This is the third Pierce Brosnan movie, 1999, The World Is Not Enough. And we had reviewed the first two all at once a few months back. Digging him as James Bond, he was pretty good.
He was definitely a good Bond. I liked him as a Bond. He made himself stand out from all the other guys, as the rest of them did. They were all that little bit different from one another while still being the character. And I liked Brosnan's Bond, especially after coming off of Timothy Dalton, who I thought was the grittiest of the Bonds.
He was great. Like, I agree with you completely on Dalton. Those were two fantastic movies.
I wish we would have gotten more out of him, for sure.
If they hadn't taken that break, he would have done at least a third one.
I think so, for sure. Yeah. But, you know, we had that long gap. Right? So we needed a new Bond, but if we would have gotten a gritty Bond at that point, it wouldn't have worked. So to have this very suave kind of Bond step in, very smooth, you know, that's the way I describe Brosnan's Bond. He's a smooth operator, this guy.
At that time, kind of the first, well, you said smooth, I would compare him to Sean Connery, because...
Early Sean Connery. But even early Sean Connery had a little bit more grit, I think. But yeah, very much a suave operator who was definitely tough and not afraid to, you know, just get in there and get his hands dirty, throwing a couple of punches here and there. Brosnan's Bond was definitely a welcome introduction when he came back. And when this movie came out, I can remember this was one that I was really anticipating. I was waiting for this one. I was looking forward to it. Just because of the mention of some of the plot points in the trailers, like the nuclear stuff and things like that, you know, a supervillain who's, you know, very supervillainish, you know, right up the alley with some of that classic Bond that we really hadn't seen in a while.
Yeah,
so
definitely.
I was definitely looking forward to it.
Yeah, and from what I remember, was it you that said you liked Robert Carlyle in this movie?
Yeah, well, I like Robert Carlyle.
Oh, he's great.
Everything.
I love that
There's
guy.
There's nothing that he's done that I can't enjoy.
Unfortunately, I'd seen him so much in Once Upon a Time lately, I couldn't get past that.
Yeah, see, I don't watch that stuff. I had watched movies like Ravenous and was it Trainspotting, I think.
Oh, right.
So
Big Stargate guy, too, I guess.
Yeah, like, he's just done so many good roles where it's easy to just accept him as the character rather than who he is.
Yeah.
He, I thought, made an awesome villain.
Creepy.
I honestly wish we had more of him in the movie, because I think we could have seen him being even more fierce than he was.
Yeah. But like I said, creepy as hell.
Yeah.
Creepy as all anything.
But really, put yourself in that situation. if something like that happened to you and you were the kind of messed up type of guy he was, you'd do the same thing. You'd be pretty twisted and be like, I'm going to exploit my power.
Yeah, I guess so.
Because you guys are the weak. And, you know, you would expect that. And he did that perfectly.
Yeah, definitely. So let's see. So like I said, it was 1999, the end of the 20th century. Fairly recent, 15 years ago.
Wow.
If you can believe that.
Wow, I was 21.
Yeah. The 19th Bond movie at that time.
Yep. Yep, that was...
A lot of mileage out of the series at that point.
Yeah, yeah, and, you know, a lot of familiar faces that had come and gone through all the years. This was also Desmond Llewellyn's last one.
Yeah, it was sad when I read that, because unfortunately he passed away in an automobile accident, like, shortly before the movie came out, I guess.
I don't think it was an automobile accident. I thought he just died because he was old.
No, it was an accident, according to IMDb and Wikipedia.
Oh. Yeah. I never actually looked into it. I just knew it was sad because, like, he had been up there. He had...
Yeah, well, he was really old at the time.
Yeah, really old. He had been in, what, every one of them except for...
Live and Let Die. Scheduling conflict with that one.
Yeah, but he wasn't in Doctor No.
He was... Oh, I guess he was in everything from Russia with Love up, yeah, with the exception of Live and Let Die.
Yeah, so he had made it through more Bond movies than anybody else.
Yeah, still to this day, actually.
Yeah, and... I thought that even though his part was, it's always small, he always got a lot of life out of his character.
Oh, and yeah.
Even with him being as ancient as he was in this film, you still got that same energy out of him.
Yeah.
And it was great, and I thought his exit in his little bit there was just brilliant. And, you know, it was a really fitting way to kind of say goodbye.
Yeah. Still cool. Still hating Bond. Still getting pissed off every time Bond wrecked an invention.
Yep. Yep. In particular, well, the fishing boat for his retirement.
Yeah, fascinating fact, actually. I read that if you go back and add up all the Desmond Llewellyn scenes from all the movies, all the Bond movies he was in, totaled a little over half an hour, I guess.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought it would have totaled more than that.
I would have thought so, too.
Because in movies like...
But in this one, he was only in it for about 5 minutes, maybe.
What was it? The Living... No, not in Living Daylights. License to Kill, he had a fair bit of screen time.
Wasn't that the one where he went out on the mission with him?
Yeah, yeah.
So probably the most screen time he got in.
I think so.
But if they're only counting the time he was on screen,
yeah,
not the whole scene.
Oh,
so
yeah.
So they cut to him, they cut away.
Yeah.
So just the time he was there.
But always cool, that guy, yeah, man. But always cool.
Over, what, 40 years?
Yeah.
Yeah.
40 years of Bond.
17 movies.
17 movies, half an hour of screen time.
Yeah.
And he's still one of the most recognizable characters from the Bond universe.
Oh, yeah.
That's, I don't know, I'd say he did more than his part.
Yeah.
Oh, he was always cool. I was sad when I read about how he died, because he said he was going to be in at least one more. Which I guess
which is wild, because he introduced John Cleese in this,
yeah,
as his replacement for his retirement.
Yeah. But yeah, you're right, though. A nice way to kind of write him out. He was retiring, and...
Yeah, and he had this... His thing to Bond was, you know, always have an exit strategy, and he just lowered down through the floor. It was
yeah,
perfect. That was probably one of my favorite, if not my favorite, Q moment out of all of his moments.
Now, let me ask you this, because I read this, and it wasn't on the copy we had of it. I guess in later versions of it, the whole end credits of the movie was scenes of him throughout the various Bond movies.
On the VHS copy that I had, it was released with, I guess, kind of an homage to his career in the Bond films,
yeah,
kind of celebrating his life and his acting,
yeah,
with Bond as Q. So, yeah, there was a nice montage put together of all of his appearances as Q with little snippets of... some of his dialogue, and it was set to the same music that was used in The Spy Who Loved Me.
Okay.
The Nobody Does It Better song.
Oh, right, okay, yeah.
So to that song, you got this wonderful montage of all of his times as Q with little bits of his snarky lines and whatnot at Bond, and It was really, really nice. It's on the VHS copy.
Okay. It's probably on YouTube or something like that.
Oh, most definitely it would have to be. But yeah, it was really nice. A really nice tribute.
Yeah, I know there's more movies to go. I'm going to miss seeing him, I think, because fantastic.
I'm not going to lie. You will miss seeing him. Like, he had become such a staple that it was such a nice way to say goodbye, but at the same time, it's... Shit, we had to say goodbye.
Yeah.
So I don't want to say anything about what happens next in the next batch of movies.
I will ask you this, though. Does John Cleese come back for the last Brosnan movie, or is there someone new guiding him?
I'm pretty sure Cleese comes back for one more.
Okay.
For the last Brosnan one.
For the last Brosnan, yeah.
And then everything changes after...
Oh, yeah, the total reboot.
Yeah. So I believe we get one more Cleese. I haven't watched that one in a long time for certain reasons. And we'll get to that.
We'll get to that
next
time. Like, Kath and I brought this up not too long ago, like when we were watching the Roger Moore movies. Sure, some of the movies may have been bad. Never the fault of the guy playing Bond, though. It was like the script they had to work with or whatnot.
Yeah, I would always say that what it came down to when you have a Bond movie that is less successful or less poor, not as well put together as some of the others, it came down to, I think, for the most part, I don't like blaming the directors.
Right.
I'd never blame the Bond. It comes down to either the script or the editor. Because those are really the only ones that change. Because, like, you got directors like John Glenn who did a whole whack.
Oh, yeah.
Especially through the Roger Moore era. So you know that you had a certain level of consistency out of either the performer or the director. But it was the editors and the scriptwriters that often changed a little bit there.
Yeah.
And I think that's where some of them fall short.
So yeah.
It's easy to not blame the Bonds because you know that they were just doing what they were supposed to do.
Yeah, definitely.
If anything, they saved what little bit they could.
Oh, definitely. Like, even some of the Roger Moore... I'm not hiding my distaste for some of the Roger Moore movies, but he was great in them. It wasn't the fact that he was ruining the movies.
No, it's just... His were definitely set up to be campier. The sound effects that were thrown in and...
The jokes.
The jokes and stuff like that. That's all writing.
Oh, yeah.
And you can't even blame the director for that because the director's just going by what he had for a script. Now, Roger Moore was my Bond to grow up with.
Right.
I was introduced at A View to a Kill, and that's where I went on from there. So I have a little bit of a soft spot for Roger Moore as Bond, but as I've gotten older, I've definitely come to appreciate Timothy Dalton with that grittier, more action-like movie.
Oh, yeah.
Sean Connery for being that, you know, the same thing, but really the essential Bond for the most part. But everybody else, it's... You can never blame the Bonds.
No, definitely not.
Bond girls sometimes, but not Bonds.
Yeah, definitely, eh?
Yeah.
Oh, well, cricket, yeah, cricket. Yeah.
Cricket, cricket, cricket.
Let's see.
Now, you watched the whole thing, obviously.
I watched the whole thing. It took me two views.
You fell asleep?
No, I didn't fall asleep. I think I felt like I had to stop the movie and...
Wow, really?
Yeah.
See, I get to that point now, but I've seen this movie 50, 60 times. Because I do a regular marathon of all the Bond movies, you know, every couple of months. But this one, I'm just now getting to the point where I get about halfway through and I just kind of stop paying attention. I, like, clean or I do something else.
Yeah.
And you had to do that on the first
watch. I had to do that on the first watch. I'm not going to lie, the first hour, kind of boring. I thought it was kind of boring. There were some good moments, but too much talking, I felt.
Really?
Yeah.
See, I thought it was a really good build-up. I didn't find there was too much talking at all, actually, in this one. It was not... I didn't find it as smart as I think they meant it to be.
Yeah, definitely. That's a good word for it.
But I think that part of that was the way they put Denise Richards in it. Not that she's not a good Bond girl.
Right.
I think she is a good Bond girl. She's obviously, at that time, certainly smoking
hot. Oh, I was going to say, let's be honest here. Back in the late 90s, early 2000s, she was gorgeous.
Oh, yeah. And, like, this is what, right after, I think she did Wild Things.
Yeah, Starship Troopers.
With Nev Campbell and Starship Troopers. So, these are movies where, you know, every young guy is looking at her as, like, the hottest thing on TV.
For sure. And you know what? She wasn't that bad in this movie.
she wasn't that bad, but she certainly, in my opinion, didn't fit the role that they gave her.
Yeah, like, looking back on her career now and watching this recently, I couldn't quite buy her as a nuclear scientist.
I couldn't buy her as a nuclear physicist at the time, and I still can't now. She seemed far too young at the time.
Yeah.
And really, I would have expected her to be less of a smartass and more of a bitch if she was a nuclear physicist.
Yeah.
Because she would have had to deal with a lot more hardships in that world of men, right? So she would have had more of a chip on her shoulder rather than just being a little bit sarcastic.
Yeah.
That's the way I felt about it. So I couldn't buy her as a woman who had happened to look as good as she did, who came up in a field of intellectuals surrounded by men who definitely would not accept her in that area. Certainly not at the time. Nowadays it's a different story, or maybe not so much a different story, but
yeah.
I think the sexism would have made her more of a rigid character, and it didn't.
Yeah. Now let me ask you this, because I read that another actress considered for her, who, I don't know if she's still hot now, she was then, Tiffany Amber Thiessen. Saved by the Bell, Beverly Hills.
Oh, I know exactly who you're talking about.
So I guess they were going with that, you know, that type of actress for that role, I guess.
If it would have come down to the two of them,
yeah,
I would have chosen Denise Richards.
Right.
Simply because Tiffany Amber Thiessen, I don't know what she looks like now either, but back in the day, yeah.
Yeah.
Hot girl.
Yeah.
I don't think she's got the acting chops to even come close to pulling off the role of a Bond girl.
Probably not.
I don't think she could have pulled off a Bond girl with no lines, to be honest with you. So, yeah, I would have chosen Denise Richards for that over her.
Cool. Why don't we take a quick break, and then we'll start getting into some of the scenes and stuff like that right after this.
Face front, true believers. John Ballmer is an independent artist and illustrator. He has contributed to several indie comics published by Alterna Comics and more, and is able to draw in many styles and genres. John also does commission work in sizes ranging from 3x5 inches to 11x17 inches and even larger. Add some original art to your personal collection or surprise someone with a drawing just for them. Check out his work at drawnbyjohn.com and his Facebook group, Drawn by John, The Art of John J.C. Ballmer.
All right, we're back. It's Jay Stu and John Ballmer. We're sitting here talking about The World Is Not Enough, the 19th James Bond movie, third with Pierce Brosnan, who we can agree was a fantastic Bond.
Absolutely, yep. And, it, you know, a fantastic title, too. We were discussing this a bit before we started. One of the things that I really liked about this movie is that it used the actual Bond family motto. And it's not just mentioned in the movie like they do, where they, you know, he says in response to what they had to offer him, you know, the world is not enough. And they say, oh, it's a foolish sentiment.
Yeah.
His line is family motto. Well, they weren't just throwing that in there as a gag. If you go back to the George Lazenby film on Her Majesty's Secret Service, when they actually look at the family coat of arms, it actually does tell you back then that that is the family model. The world is not enough.
It's funny you brought that up there. There were a few moments in this movie that did remind me of the Lazenby movie. There was a scene where someone had asked him, have you ever lost someone you loved? And then he had that look on his face like he was thinking about the wife from
Teresa.
Teresa, yeah. And then, of course, the ski scene.
Yeah. Gotta have the ski scenes. And actually, that was a... If I'm not mistaken, that was the first ski scene we've had in a while with Bond.
Was there any Timothy Dalton ones? I'm having a hard time remembering.
They went down the mountain on a cello.
That's right. Okay.
But
I knew there was something there.
There was no skiing in GoldenEye. There was him ramping off of a snowy mountaintop in a motorcycle and catching onto a plane.
Yeah, oh, that's cool.
But no, I don't think there was actually any skiing in GoldenEye. And Tomorrow Never Dies never had any skiing.
Yeah.
That took place in the East Indian Ocean.
Yeah.
So this
not
was,
a lot of skiing there.
No. So this was, I think, our first bit of skiing in quite some time in the Bond films, and the first one with Brosnan. And I like having the skiing in the Bond movies. It's one more of those things that just becomes a staple. And it was great to see that, and I think that whole sequence through the skiing and the parahawks and all that, that was awesome. I loved it. Still love that sequence. What was your thoughts on it?
I could have done without more ski.
Really?
Yeah.
Man, see, it's something I look forward to, but I think that's just going back to the classic Bond where
yeah.
just about every Sean Connery movie had
and some Roger Moore,
and a lot of Roger Moore.
Now, you said you liked the title for the movie. There was other titles considered for the film, I guess. One was Death Waits for No Man, Fire and Ice, and Dangerously Yours.
Out of those ones, Dangerously Yours is the only one I think that would be a cool Bond title, but certainly not for this movie.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Definitely not for this one.
No. Now, if we're talking action sequences in this movie, I think my favorite was near the end of the movie where the helicopter had that blade device on the bottom of it. It was cutting through all the...
Oh, yeah, they used to cut through the brush along roadways and stuff like that, and it was cutting up the...
cars.
The Zhukovsky... caviar factory.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty awesome.
Right through Bond's car, of course, he immediately said Q's going to be mad. And
yeah. Well, because, yeah, Q would do him in, right?
Yeah.
But, yeah, that was pretty awesome. A nice sequence. I enjoyed that. It did certainly give you an impression of peril, thinking something was going to happen to somebody going on with that, and really it was the scenery, the location that really took the punishment. I thought that was cool.
Yeah,
of course, I think they fired way too many shots at Bond to have not, like, clipped him.
Yeah, definitely. I thought that, actually, when I was watching it.
And actually, I was thinking that. Obviously, you thought that. And if you go back to the newly revised edition, the complete James Bond movie encyclopedia that I have, that ends with the Pierce Brosnan-era Bonds, they actually mentioned that as well, about them firing off that many shots and not actually getting anywhere with it. It's a great book that has so many pieces of information that you never knew, and then also the writer's perspective on a lot of what happened with it. So it's good to look back and kind of see that you weren't the only one that thought that sometimes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It seemed like just thousands of shots went towards him and nothing.
Yeah, if they could cut up that whole caviar factory and, you know, go right down dead center of that car, how could they not have just... If you're a trained marksman, even if you're firing out of a helicopter, you would know that you don't follow your target. You lead your target, and you shoot ahead of them so that they run into your bullets.
Yeah.
It's just logic, and it's like watching the old G.I. Joe cartoons from when you're a kid. Nobody ever got hit. And Bond just never gets shot.
I was thinking the original A-Team with that, actually.
Exactly, A-Team. Nobody ever got hit in that either.
Yeah.
And, man, how many bullets did they fire in every single episode?
And that show was on for about 4 years, too, and no one ever got shot.
I miss that show. It's nice having Netflix, being able to go back and watch that every now and then. I still enjoy it. But, man, yeah. It's a good thing they didn't actually take money when they did those jobs.
Yeah, can you imagine? I did enjoy one of the opening scenes where the death scene of Sir Robert King was pretty creepy.
That was pretty awesome. I have to admit, it's the lead-in sequence before the opening credits. This was a really good one. And I think it... See, Tomorrow Never Dies, the opening sequence of that one fell short for me. It didn't have enough. It was cool, but it was just too much excitement too fast.
Yeah.
If you go back to GoldenEye, the build-up of him actually trying to get into that installation, there's this really slow build-up. You're not really seeing him much, and he gets in, he does everything, and flies off in the plane at the end, and then we go into the opening credits.
Yeah.
This one had that same kind of energy where there was this casual build-up of what he's doing and where he is, and then, boom, action. Everything goes smooth, and then it just tapers off again before we go in, and it eases into the credits. Really, really exciting sequence, I thought.
Yeah, the headquarters blows up.
Yeah, and it was great. And well, the headquarters blowing up, that comes after the credits,
but it's
part of that whole situation. Yeah. But yeah, to start it off with the who they called the cigar girl,
right? With the and he had the glasses on that.
Yeah, that's
with
part
his gun.
But the girl in the boat, the cigar girl in the boat, The one thing that really still to this day bugs the hell out of me about her bit, you know, after we have the explosion that kills Sir Robert King and MI6 has the wall blown out and he's looking out over the Thames and he sees the boat there and she's got a rifle and she's got the laser pointer on him. She's shooting at the opening to try and get, you know, Robert King if he survived. She's got this massive machine gun on the back of the boat. She uses it later on during the boat chase.
Right.
But how does a large pleasure craft come all the way down the Thames out in front of MI6, so the headquarters of British intelligence?
Yeah.
How does a large pleasure craft get out in front of there within firing distance with a very visible, what looks to be like a 50 caliber machine gun mounted to the back?
True.
How does that not raise any alarms?
Yeah.
That still to this day drives me nuts. But oh well, she was hot.
Yeah, I'm looking at my notes about that opening scene. That was the boat, or the bat boat, as I was calling it, because that's what it reminded me of.
You're right. You know what? The boat sequence is all before the credits, because it's when she blows up in the balloon.
Yeah, that's right. That's okay. Yeah.
Yeah, so that was longer than I thought.
Now, interesting fact, you were mentioning this before the show, you tried to sit in that boat once.
I did. I believe there was 5 of those boats made for that the stunt team used. Obviously had them for different purposes. One was the jumping boat that had the jets mounted to it so it could do that spiral jump.
Yeah.
Others were meant to be put underwater and whatnot. And at one point in time, here in Niagara Falls on Clifton Hill, we had an MGM store.
I remember.
Neither one of us know if it's still there.
That's been a while, yeah. Cool store, though.
But when that MGM store was open, they had some amazing stuff in there. They had a lot of James Bond stuff, one of which was one of those stunt boats. And I remember walking in there and just being blown away. First of all, thinking, oh my God, this is tiny. But when you think about it, it's a one-man kind of attack ship, right?
Yeah.
Q's fishing boat, as he puts it. And I remember seeing it and putting my hands on it and just being just blown away that I'm sitting here touching not only a piece of film history, but a piece of the Bond film history. And I'm like, this was just so cool. And there was signs posted on it that you're not supposed to touch it. And I was touching it anyways. And there was also signs posted on it that you're not supposed to get into it. And I was caught trying to climb into it. I'm a relatively large guy. It's not easy for me to get through things like that unseen.
Especially in a little boat like that.
And in a tiny shop like that. And yeah, I got busted and I was asked not to try that again. And I tried it one more time and then I was asked to leave.
Nice. And this boat even, I guess, was on the street even in the movie.
Kind of, yeah. It's a jet boat, right? Yeah. So in theory, it should be able to use its rocket propulsion to just project itself anywhere.
Yeah.
So yeah, it went through a sequence of the canals in England, kind of actually up some almost like mini lock systems through this canal and then actually like through a restaurant and along a street and through an alley and out off of a buffet table and back in the water. All supposedly under the jet propulsion.
Not wrecking it at all, like driving on the street or...
Well, it's armored, right?
I guess. I don't know. It looked a little fake.
That's one of those things that you kind of suspend a little bit of disbelief on.
Yeah.
There's other things in this movie, like Denise Richards' character, where maybe wouldn't suspend disbelief on that. But, you know, you get the point. It's supposed to be a fun sequence, right? And it certainly was. Yeah.
It wasn't... My favorite boat chase still, I think, was it Live and Let Die?
Live and Let Die.
With the redneck sheriff.
I think it had the longest boat chase out of any Bond movie, let alone maybe any movie. That was a ridiculously long boat chase.
It was. I remember loving it, though.
I think they went through like 3 boats each or something. Yeah. Well,
and the dog thing, so too. But, yeah, some of the boat chase in this one was good. Some I had a hard time buying. That jump he made right under the ladder of the balloon was a little far-fetched, I thought.
No, because he had jumped out of the water off the back of the boat.
Yeah.
And then he hit that embankment that pushed him up that little bit further. I could buy it. If they didn't cut that in where he actually hit the ground to propel him a little bit further upward, you couldn't buy it. But they added that in, so I accept it.
All right, agree to disagree, I guess, on that one. But, yeah, it was a good opening scene. The song by Garbage, not that memorable to me.
It was a little bit too mellow, I think. Yeah. I think it fit the movie, but I think it was a little bit too
no
mellow.
No Duran Duran, that's for sure.
No. No aha.
No aha. No McCartney.
Wings. It was Wings.
Wings, yeah. Didn't even make the charts here. Top 10 in England, though, I guess.
Well, everything's top 10 in England. It's a tiny country.
Yeah, and I don't know if you noticed this. Did you rewatch it, or has it been a while since you've seen it?
I watched it on, today's Sunday. I watched it on Wednesday.
Now, I love seeing this guy show up in movies now. The African-American guy at the beginning of the movie is Oliver Queen's stepfather from Arrow.
Yes.
Looking like, as Kat said, about 15 years old.
Yeah. Well, I'm
with hair.
I'm pretty sure he's in all of Pierce Brosnan's.
Oh, is he? I don't remember.
I think he's like a background character in the Pierce Brosnan era. I know the one actor who plays the character of Tanner, he was one of the people at MI6. He's in all of the Brosnan ones, but I'm pretty sure that actor, he it wasn't just this one he was in. He was in at least one or two more.
Okay.
But yeah, it's cool to see him, especially now knowing what he's been up to lately. Right?
Yeah, definitely. Let's see. Well, why don't we take another break? We'll come back with some more thoughts on some of the scenes and stuff like that. On The World Is Not Enough. So we'll be right back.
Mostly Comics has been serving the Niagara region for over 30 years. The store sells a variety of comics and entertainment-related products, including graphic novels, toys, and collectibles. Mostly also purchases rare comics upon appraisal. Visit Kim and the Gang at 413 St. Paul Street in St. Catharines, or check out their website at www.mostlycomics.com.
All right, we are back here talking about The World Is Not Enough, the 19th James Bond movie, here with John Balmer. What did you think about the character of Elektra as played by Sophie Marceau in the movie? Like, I thought it was kind of a good twist near the end.
I thought her character added the element of the twist. Obviously, that's why she was there. But I thought that she did it well. I didn't like her character. But as really the villainess, I don't think I was supposed to.
No.
I didn't find her all that attractive. As a Bond girl kind of character, like as a female Bond kind of universe exister.
Yeah. Really weird.
Call her that.
Yeah, really weird situation with her and Robert Carlyle in the movie, too.
Yeah, yeah. I think that there was just that right amount of awkwardness to just make you not sure if you wanted to give a shit about her or not.
Yeah.
I certainly didn't throughout the movie. So even when you thought she was the victim,
yeah.
I thought it. You know, it's just another little spoiled bitch who really doesn't deserve the attention that she got, and here she is whining about it, so she's probably going to do something stupid, and then you find out
and
that
she did. Yeah.
Right? So that's the impression I got through that whole thing with her character. To be honest with you, the only part with her character that I liked was, like, almost near the end.
Oh, yeah.
When she's on that island, the Widow's Walk Island on... in Turkey, in Istanbul, where she takes a sheet off of this piece of machinery, it looks like, that they had dug up near there, and it's basically a torture seat that she puts Bond in.
With the, yeah.
To be honest with you, that was really the only scene that I actually liked her in, where I could say that was cool, and that she was in it. And that was also the only point in the movie where I actually found her really attractive as well.
Oh, yeah.
Man, an amazing set of legs on her there. But, yeah, I really didn't like her character overall.
No.
I don't know if that's because I'm not supposed to like the character or if just because her performance was a little bit flat.
I see what you did there.
yeah. Okay. We'll go with that, too.
What else? Did you buy Denise Richards in any of the scenes she was in? Could you get past the fact that she's not really a nuclear scientist?
Well, I've already mentioned that I couldn't buy her as a physicist. That's not to say I couldn't buy her as a character who could do some of the shit she was doing. As a nuclear physicist, no, I can't buy that. As somebody possibly trained to use some of the tools and equipment involved with it.
Yeah.
That's a possibility, maybe like an assistant or something like that. So when they're in that tunnel, they're in the pipeline, and she's using the computer to try and read what's going on with the explosive that they've got in there, I can accept that. That's about it.
All right. Kind of a decent action sequence, the one you mentioned as well.
Yeah, it was another one of my favorite sequences out of the movie. I thought that was just badass. And
I thought they would... He kind of initially faked his own death in that scene, right?
Yeah.
I thought that would have lasted a little bit longer than it did in the movie.
Yeah.
It's like literally 5 minutes later, oh, Bond's really still alive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. I thought that they did so much good work to set that up that they would have exploited it a little bit more.
Yeah.
You know, get the characters a little bit further, and they didn't. So that was a little bit disappointing, but, you know, you got to move the script along, right?
Yeah. And you know what? He never thought he'd have Christmas in Turkey, so.
Well, because Christmas only comes once a year.
By the way, Kath made a joke during the movie, like, someone, we had to stop it, and we were like, we should watch it, or we'll never know how it ends. And then we made the joke, well, I made the joke, it's probably going to end with him having sex with some chick somewhere on video, and they're all going to be standing around watching it.
Yep. Again, another one of those things.
And it happened.
It has kind of become... not so much a staple, but it's in several of them, and it's always Q that's involved, right?
Yeah, so I was surprised he wasn't there for that scene.
It was... I compare this one to being almost a ripoff of what they did in Moonraker, where it was actually on a video screen, and he was with Dr. Holly Goodhead, and he says, oh, I think he's attempting re-entry.
Yes.
It's almost identical to that whole situation, except the fact that it's not... they're not talking to Bond... even though it is a live feed, they see what he's doing, and everybody seems surprised. I'm like, it's Bond. Everybody knows what he's doing.
It's getting redder.
Yeah. It's, so, I honestly, I felt that scene kind of ripped off Moonraker a bit. But you're right. It was one of those things that was bound to happen.
Yeah, definitely. The thing I liked about this movie, as much as I knocked the first hour of it, I really liked the gadgets in this one. The gadgets really did it for me. Like,
there was a lot of gadgets in this one.
Like, some really good ones, too.
And I like the gadgets, but I don't like it when the gadgets are overdone. And I felt that in this one, we were starting to push that boundary of maybe there was a little bit too much in the way of gadgets.
Well, the credit card with the file in it was a bit much. The lock-picking tool,
I thought that was actually cool.
Well, it was
that
funny because I said, don't they usually use credit cards to pick locks with? And then a lock-picking tool pops out of it.
Well, if you haven't done it before, use a credit card to get in behind the latch.
Right.
It doesn't work on things like a deadbolt. You would need something to pick the lock. But that's a whole other story.
Yeah, I guess.
What really was over the top for me was the Ascension cable and P-tong that come out of his watch.
Oh, yeah.
That stuck into a solid steel I-beam and still lifted him up?
Yeah.
Come on.
Carried his weight.
I can understand the cable being able to hold his weight. Sure, no problem. I can understand it firing out from behind his watch with some sort of mild propulsion. Okay. But that tiny P-tong sticking into a solid steel I-beam and holding enough to hold him up, that I couldn't buy. That was just... I call bullshit on that one. Yeah. Maybe you could have wrapped around something.
Oh, maybe, yeah.
But to stick into an I-beam? Come on. That's just reaching.
Yeah. I did like the remote control glasses at the beginning, though, when he had his gun sitting on the table there.
Yeah, that was pretty badass. I dig that, you know, using the one thing they're going to take away as something against them still, even though you don't have it. That was definitely cool. The car was cool. The car was cool.
Yeah, the car was cool.
I wish we would have got more of the car.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot of it, and then it got cut in half, as we mentioned.
Yeah. The jacket was, I think, my favorite gadget. The avalanche-proof gadget.
Oh, right.
The jacket that just so happens to be in the episode where he goes skiing.
Yes.
I still want one of those jackets. Can you imagine? I would constantly have to buy new cartridges because I would just be walking down the street, pull the tab, and just have this ball form up around me.
That would be funny. Definitely. The fight scene at the end with... Robert Carlyle was pretty well done. He had an awesome death scene.
Yeah.
Spoilers.
He definitely had an awesome death scene. I did like that. I found it a little bit hard to buy into Robert Carlyle actually getting beat up whenever Bond did get him really good. because if you can't feel it, you're not going to react that way. So if you get hit in the head, yeah, you're going to stumble a bit. You've been pushed over, but he's not supposed to be able to feel any of that.
Yeah.
So maybe it throws him off balance a little bit, but he's not going to fall down and go, oh. No, he's going to fall and be like, what the? And then go after him, right?
Yeah.
So I thought that maybe they didn't pay him enough attention to how that would have worked out. But I still did like that it wasn't Bond just using brute force to actually take him out. I like how they actually did finish him off. I think that was really well done, that part.
Yeah, it was a good fight. It was pretty brutal.
Yeah, definitely brutal, that's for sure. And, you know, I don't care if you can't feel anything or not. That's the sucky way to go.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, right through the guts. Nice.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, what else did you like about this movie? Any particular scenes or...
I've already mentioned a lot of the stuff that I really liked. If there's anything that maybe I didn't mention, let's see.
Oh, there were bagpipe guns that were pretty cool.
Yeah, anything with Q, you gotta love it. Fantastic. But, yeah, I think I've already mentioned pretty much everything that I liked the most out of it. I like that Judi Dench's character got to do a little bit in showing her intelligence in the field with the locator card she had in her pocket. She knew enough to get that battery and fire it up so that there would be a signal. You could see some office dweller or number cruncher, as she's referred to in previous Bonds, they wouldn't think to do that.
No.
So the fact that she knew enough of what it was, what she could do with it, and how that could get her saved, or at least get her locations found, I really liked that. And I think this was the first time we saw Judi Dench in the field.
Yeah.
Certainly not the last time, I will tell you that, but this was the first time we saw her in the field, and that was cool. I liked seeing her out of the office.
Yeah, it was pretty decent. Why don't we take our last break, and when we come back, I'll give my rating and tell you how I got to that rating, and we'll go from there.
Perhaps I'll give a rating as well.
Oh, cool. We'll be right back.
Sketchbook Comics and Games is a store that has something awesome for everyone. In addition to selling comics, board games, and action figures, there are tables for open gaming. Wednesday nights, Sketchbook features game night starting at 6 p.m. Friday through Sunday, Sketchbook is the place to be for Magic the Gathering. The store is located at 224 Glenridge Avenue, Unit 9 in St. Catharines. Come on down for all your geek and comic book needs.
All right, we're back here talking The World Is Not Enough, the James Bond movie. And we've said our thoughts on the different action scenes and the acting and whatnot. So I'm going to give my rating on this movie. I'm going to give it 3 out of 5 Denise Richards tank tops.
3 out of 5 Denise Richards
tank tops. And here's how I got to that rating. I'm going to give 1 for the gadgets, 1 for late 90s hot Denise Richards, and 1 for Q.
Really?
Yeah.
You're not giving anything to Bond himself.
Not in this rating. Like I said, I had to stop the movie in the middle. Never good when all you can think about through the first half is, I wonder what I'm going to have for supper tomorrow and stuff like that.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I like the first two Brosnan movies a lot better than this one. That being said, the second half I thought it picked up a little bit and the action scenes were decent.
Yeah, okay. Believe it or not, I'm actually going to agree with you. I do rate it a 3 out of 5, but I rate it 3 shitty pitongs in I-beams out of 5. Because there was just this movie had just that little bit too much to be able to suspend disbelief.
Yeah.
That's where it fell short for me. There was just... It wasn't all in one spot. It was spread out through the movie, so you could watch it and kind of let it go. But for fans like me who watch these things over and over and over again and read about them and, you know, put a lot of attention into Bond overall, it's something that just eats away at you.
Yeah.
So, yeah, 3 shitty pitons.
Cool, and Kat's still with us. She saw it in the theater. Probably didn't pay that much attention to this one. Can't say as I blame her.
2 skis out of 5.
2 skis out of 5.
Yeah.
So at least one person can go skiing with your rating.
Yep.
There you go. So coming up next, we're almost at the end of this journey, believe it or not. We have 4 more movies to go.
We have the last Pierce Brosnan one, Die Another Day, which I am really looking forward to doing that one.
Yeah, Hunter says he wants to be in on that one for sure.
Yeah, I think Hunter and I are going to have a lot to say about that one, and I think you will keep up with us.
Okay.
In that one. I think that one's going to be a good
one. Well, I already know Halle Berry's in it, and that's sometimes not a good thing.
We're saving this
for
that review. Okay. And then we're going to have the Daniel Craig era. So Casino Royale, Quantum of Solace, and Skyfall.
Skyfall, yeah. And funny enough, Skyfall was the movie that kind of set off this project. I remember the weekend it came out, and I think you and Kate were on the old show, and you were talking about how you couldn't wait to see it, and that's when I piped up with, I've never seen a James Bond movie.
Yeah, yeah, I know Kate and I had talked about it. I haven't talked to her in forever. But yeah, it was, when I heard that you hadn't seen a Bond movie, it was just, my mind was blown. It's like hearing somebody who's never watched Star Wars, you want to just kind of smack them and be like, what have you been doing wasting your life?
I'd seen bits and pieces of them on TV because my parents used to watch them all the time.
Yeah, but, you know, because your parents used to watch them, it's not an acceptable reason to have been introduced to it. I started watching Bond because I had the First Choice Super Channel back in the 80s.
Yeah.
And A View to a Kill had just come out on pay TV, that we called it back then.
Yeah, oh,
not pay-per-view. It was pay TV because it was that level beyond cable.
Oh, I remember those.
Yeah, you know it. And I had been watching all kinds of different movies, like the Lou Ferrigno as Hercules.
I remember that movie
came out then. The Goonies. There was a bunch of movies
one
that come out.
One Crazy Summer stands out in my mind for some reason.
There was a bunch of movies that came out all in a row, right around that same time frame. A View to a Kill was right in there. So, you know, me being what, 7 or 8 year old boy.
Yeah.
Oh, cool! A spy movie. That's what kicked it off for me, is I just sat down and watched it because it happened to be on. So nobody introduced it to me, and still to this day, I don't think there's a single person in my family that likes Bond other than me. So, in my opinion, if you haven't just gone out and sought it out yourself, you've got issues.
Yeah, and quick, get your quick opinion on this. So, as we were mentioning a little bit, the Daniel Craig ones are kind of a reboot of the series?
It leads you to believe that it's a bit of a reboot, if you want to call it a reboot. I would say it's more of a going back to its roots.
Okay, because I heard the Casino-rama, a good description I heard
Casino
of it was,
Royale?
It's Casino, what did I say?
You said Casino-rama.
Oh, Casino-rama.
We're not in a really good
Casino Royale is kind of like the Batman Begins of the James Bond franchise, what I heard.
Casino Royale was the first book.
Yeah.
So it's the first Bond story. It was also the first Bond story ever put on TV or film. Unfortunately, in movies, it turned out to be a spoof, and it was funny as hell, but a piece of crap. And because of legal reasons, it took them this long to be able to properly do the book. So we're going back to the first Bond story with a new Bond, and they just kind of move on from there, developing the new Bond in our time now. So it's not really a reboot.
All right.
It's going back to Bond's roots way back in the 60s now.
All right. Well, because what I wanted to ask you, I guess recently, no sort of announcement has been made, but I heard they might be looking to recast the role of Jaws.
Really?
Yeah.
And we're not talking about the shark. We're talking,
no, we're
about
talking
Richard
about
Kiel.
Metal
right?
Teeth from the two
Richard
movies.
Kiel,
yeah.
I believe was
yeah,
the actor.
Richard Kiel.
Why?
I have no idea.
I hated the character.
Oh, I love the character.
I liked him in Moonraker. Didn't care for him in The Spy Who Loved Me, but I don't care for The Spy Who Loved Me. How would you do that character now? Like, in an updated version, what would be the practical application of a character having teeth like that?
I'm not sure.
Nobody nowadays would think that would be cool.
Probably.
Hey, I'm going to have teeth that makes me bite the spine of people and kill them. No, I want like a gun for an arm or something like that.
A gun for an arm. Well, he was biting through ropes and stuff too, so.
Yeah, steel cables.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've really been impressed with the way Bond has been evolving in the new three in the Daniel Craig movies.
Yeah.
And we're supposed to get at least one more with Daniel Craig.
Supposedly there's one more coming out next year in the fall of 2015.
They're keeping it pretty damn quiet because I've not read anything yet. So, yeah, at least...
Well, one of the Marvel movies had to change their date because it was supposed to be released on the same day as the next Bond movie.
Well, and then that's going to... That Marvel movie would flop in a heartbeat.
Oh, probably, yeah. Considering the last Bond movie was the first one to make over $1 billion.
Yeah, I'm one of those opening night Bond guys. It's that movie's coming out. I'm there.
Well, maybe by that time I'll be ready to see my first Bond movie in a theater.
I think, to be honest with you, we're going to get through the remaining four films pretty quickly. It took a long time to get to where we are now.
Like, I admit I had to take a break after the Roger Moore ones.
With the Daniel Craig movies, you'd probably want to review those three movies in 3 days or over maybe the course of 3 weeks. Certainly, I would like to do that way. I want to go over Die Another Day soon.
Okay.
So we need to get Hunter on the call.
I'm dying to see it now that you said we would spend a whole hour like talking about it.
We might have to break it into two parts.
Really?
I think there's enough material for that discussion to fill 2 hours.
Okay.
Especially if you put Hunter and I together with you.
Yeah.
And I've seen how you get when you watch certain types of movies. And remember, this movie is not of my recommendation, so if you try to blame me for anything, I'll hate you.
I get it.
But this movie is one that I don't even recommend it.
As really? A Bond movie. That's how bad it is, eh?
There's a lot of awesome stuff in it. There really is. And Pierce Brosnan is still an awesome Bond. But I don't recommend this one as a Bond movie. And believe it or not, I watch it less than I watch this Spy Who Loved Me.
Wow, that's pretty bad then.
It's something.
Wow. Well, I kind of can't wait to watch it now for that reason.
Maybe sometime in the next 2 weeks or so, we should set this up and we'll watch that one and get that one out of the way so that we can start on the Daniel Craig ones, because I think your mind is just going to be blown with
I think those. So. I think so.
I think you were... You haven't read the books.
No.
I'm a fan of the books. Like, hands down, the books are fantastic. Casino Royale, if you read the book and then watch the movie, is just a... It's just one of those things that you can't help sit and think, oh my God, this is just... There's so many things in the movie that you look back at the book and it's like, yeah, that's there, that's there. They did this a little bit different, but wow, it's still there. It's awesome. So good.
Cool. Well, let's end it there because I think I'm pretty much done talking about The World Is Not Enough.
Yeah, I'm pretty much done talking. I'm ready to move on to the next one.
All right, well, we'll catch you next time when we review Die Another Day, and we'll see if I actually like it or not.
I know the answer to that question.
Well, I guess we'll find out soon. So thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back real soon. James Bond will return and Die Another Day.
Yeah. Wow. Let's just leave it at that.
All right.
Thanks for listening. To hear more We Got the Geek, check us out at www.wegotthegeek.com and on iTunes.